Nerds.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Life comes with big money questions. Are target date funds a smart or lazy way to invest? Should you pay off debt or invest extra cash? Can you deduct your dog as a home security system on your taxes? NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the answers. Their finance journalists break down investing strategies, tax planning, and smart ways to build wealth and navigate big financial decisions. Work smarter, not harder, on your finances this year. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm Jordan Robinson, host of the new podcast, The Women's Hoop Show. Each episode, I'll be joined by a rotating group of women's basketball experts to talk WNBA, college hoops, the new Unrivaled League, and the shifting landscape of the sport. The game is growing, and so are we. Listen to and follow The Women's Hoop Show and Odyssey Podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Chicago's news, traffic, and weather station, News Radio 105.9. Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
It's 12:03, Tuesday afternoon, March 11th. Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us. I'm Rob Hart. Southwest Airlines dropping its long-standing two bags fly free policy. We'll cover that in our next segment. Right now, markets drop as tariff fears escalate. Plus, the time-tested Dow theory has turned bearish. Let's discuss the latest developments with Chuck Carlson, CEO of Horizon Investment Services in Hammond, Indiana. Find him online at horizoninvestment.com. Chuck, thank you for joining us today. And oh, what timing. Yesterday, when you were on the Stock Picker Monday segment, I asked you, give us an update on what the Dow theory is telling us. And you said that there was a new low, and that was the closing figure. And the Dow blew through that and ran through the tape, as it were, with enthusiasm yesterday afternoon.
It did. And that close below that previous important level, which was around 42,000, triggered a bear market signal under the Dow theory. In order for it to have a bear market signal, you need both the Dow Jones Transportation Average and the Dow Jones Industrial Average to both go to new, what we deem as significant lows. And the transports had already done that, so we were kind of waiting on the industrials, and they did that yesterday. The one point I do want to make is, you know, while a lot of the focus goes on the Dow Jones Industrial Average and obviously the S&P 500 and some of the other indices, it's the action of the Dow Jones Transportation Average, which is maybe the most economically sensitive index there is in the world, quite frankly, that has really been doing poorly. And I think that does not portend well for the future economic conditions here over the next 6 months. And I think that's really what the big worry is for the market right now.
Now, 3 years ago was the last time we were talking about the Dow flashing that bearish signal. How does that change the behavior of investors when they find themselves in a bear market environment?
Well, you know what? I mean, I can tell you what we do typically. And what we do is basically, we're not all or nothing market timers. And I don't suggest people do that where they, you know, you have a bear market signal and you simply get out of the market. I think what we try to do is make adjustments around the edges of portfolios, you know, trimming some of the weaker sisters in a portfolio, perhaps trimming some of your overweights, raising a bit of cash to maybe provide a little bit of cushion here for further downside, but maybe more importantly, raising cash to be able to deploy at lower levels. So, you know, to put some numbers on that, you know, if you're somebody who's running a portfolio typically at around 100% invested in stocks, you know, we're probably now in the 70-75% range. So it's not a huge cut, but it's enough of a cut, again, to provide some cushion as well as, most importantly, raise some cash to deploy at lower levels here.
And the uncertainty that we're seeing that's driving this sell-off, is this strictly related to tariffs, or are there other economic signals, as you mentioned, just based on where the Dow transports are headed, that is just leading to that air of pessimism?
Yeah, you know, and that's hard to separate now. It'll become clear after the fact, and that's one of the reasons why we kind of let the averages tell us the story. But it would appear that, you know, tariffs obviously are exacerbating a situation of uncertainty and a situation where it could be impacting the economy. But the movement that we've seen in the transports to me indicates that there's a little bit more under the hood, so to speak, that's a bit troubling for the economy. And again, well, you know, the markets tend to be forward looking, you know, 3 to 6 months out. So, you know, 3 to 6 months out, that picture is probably going to be a lot clearer in terms of what is impacting the economy. I can tell you that, you know, recessions and bear markets oftentimes go hand in hand. So, you know, the probability of a recession has certainly risen significantly with the Dow Theory bear market signal and the poor performance of the Dow Jones Transportation Average.
Chuck Carlson, CEO of Horizon Investment Services in Hammond, Indiana. Find him online at horizoninvestment.com. Thank you for joining us today. Coming up, two bags will no longer fly for free on a major U.S. airline.
Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Travel Tuesday, part one on the Noon Business Hour. Southwest Airlines will start charging for checked bags, ending its decades-old policy, while industry leaders warn that domestic air travel is slowing down. We welcome in Joe Brank, Catelli, editor and publisher of JoeSentMe.com, based in New York. Joe, thank you for joining us today. This has been a year of change for Southwest Airlines when it comes to a number of their longstanding policies. They're introducing assigned seating for the first time. They're going to charge for bags. I mean, what's next, Joe? Are they going to get rid of the 737?
No, that's about the only thing they can hold on to, Rob. What's happening at Southwest is a strange little game where a hedge fund has come in the last year and said, you know, you got to be more like the regular airlines because your model is, you know, cheap fares and easy fares and free bags and no assigned seats. Not what people want anymore. So Southwest has basically capitulated, put five of their people on the board. As you say, first assigned seatings, now today's announcement that most fares will not include free bags, and bags fly free has been Southwest's moniker for years. The irony of it, of course, is that the last airline that tried to do this was JetBlue. That didn't work. And now the markets are all saying, you know what? People are going to be cutting back on travel because they're looking at a recession. And maybe Southwest is going in the wrong direction while the market's going to pass them right by.
Now, the bags fly free policy, that seemed to be an artifact from a time when Southwest was known the world over for holding the line on fares and holding the line on benefits for passengers because it did a great job of hedging their fuel supply. While other airlines were really, really riding the jet fuel roller coaster, Southwest had locked in a low price on jet fuel for a long time. And were they able to avoid the temptation of bag fees simply because of that jet fuel play?
No, Rob, and that ended several years ago. Southwest has never charged for bags. And again, this came in with American Airlines, at least in the United States, about a decade ago. Southwest's policies has always been about simplicity. We don't charge for bags. We don't make seat assignments. You can shuffle your fares anytime you want. If you can't fly today, well, you can use that ticket tomorrow. That fell out of vogue, although Southwest has always been profitable. It fell out of vogue because United, American, Delta were more profitable. So in comes the hedge fund and says, be like them. And now, of course, you're having Delta and United saying, oh, my God, this is not the economy thought we'd be planning into. So we're backpedaling on capacity and all sorts of other things. And that's why I wonder whether Southwest is simply making changes to keep the hedge fund happy, and it will destroy their historic profitability.
Well, you do bring up a very interesting point, and that is if the hedge fund is telling United, Southwest, that you should be more like United and American in terms of your assigned seating policies and levying a fee for checked luggage, what makes Southwest unique then? Because my first thought was, as a frequent Southwest Airlines flyer, it's like, well, now it's just another airline. And how do they avoid that perception sinking in?
Well, Rob, you're exactly 300% correct. And again, let's go back to history. About a decade ago, JetBlue Airways, which was sort of the target to Southwest Walmart, if you will, that was always the positioning. Southwest was Walmart, JetBlue was Target. They said, well, no, we got to be more like regular airlines. And they destroyed their model of being slightly different than the other guys, and their profitability sank. This is the problem, and ironically, the markets rarely tell the right story. So while stocks are being clocked today, the word of your producer, Andy, Southwest shares are up 8% last time I looked. That doesn't mean it's right. Just because people want that quarterly response, that quarterly earnings bump, the sugar high, does not mean Southwest has made the right decision here.
Joe Brancatelli, editor and publisher of JoeSentMe.com, based in New York. Thank you for joining us today. Coming up next, advertisers are increasingly spending their money on women's sports.
Discussing the news affecting your money, the WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Women's sports are seeing record ad growth as TV spending doubles. Joining us to break it all down is Tim Hanlon, founder and CEO of the Verter Group in Chicago. Tim, thank you for joining us today. And how much of this is the Caitlin Clark effect?
Well, Caitlin Clark is a phenomenon and a once-in-a-generation talent, but you can't put the entirety of the explosion of women's sports and its popularity on television of late completely on her shoulders. She's been a catalyst for sure, but it's one sport and she is but one player, albeit a significant star. But it's unmistakable how much other stuff is going on in women's sports. It seems overnight, but it's really been years in the making. And I think, frankly, her story is basically kind of the tip of the iceberg, if you will, of what's going on in women's sports generally.
And this has been building over many years. And are women's sports the beneficiary of just this need for live programming to make cable packages and broadcast television sustainable in a world of streaming?
I think that's a spot-on observation, Rob, because obviously we see the major men's historic sports with gigantic fees and rights and whatnot, and the NFL in particular leading that charge. Those rights are expensive. A lot of them are moving to streaming. They seemingly are getting ever more pricey. That is leaving a lot of room for broadcasters in particular, but cable networks as well, to find, shall we say, lesser expensive programming. And women's sports, as well as some other sort of smaller sports on the men's side, are less expensive, shall we say, and maybe more opportunistic. And you're seeing, you know, major networks like CBS filling their schedule with sports never before really seen. For example, CBS last weekend, 2 weekends ago, featured the Pro Volleyball Federation's All-Star Game in Indianapolis. Volleyball professionally has not been on CBS since 1976. And this is a great opportunity for a sport like volleyball and women's sports generally to get some oxygen, if you will, in what has largely been a testosterone-filled weekend sports menu on television.
So is this proof maybe that this market was always there, but the traditional kind of men's sports took up all the real estate, and now with streaming opening up new neighborhoods, we're finally seeing the potential that always existed after all these decades?
I think so. And look, I also think, too, it's not a niche per se. I think that maybe people would sort of argue or perceive that to have been the case. But when you open up the inventory opportunities and you see women have more opportunity and, frankly, investment in various leagues, whether it's in the NWSL in soccer or the PWHL in hockey and unrivaled in basketball as a complement to the WNBA, Athletes Unlimited, et cetera. There seems to be a lot of interest in investing in women's sports generally, and that's just going to basically drive more interest to see some of these games or a lot of these games on television or video streaming, and I just think you're going to see more of it, and it's frankly an equating, if you will, of sports opportunities, and they're just as exciting, if not more so, than the men's versions of such. And we could argue about which soccer matches are more interesting to watch. I would argue the women by far, frankly.
Tim Hanlon, founder and CEO of the Viterre Group in Chicago, thank you for joining us today. Still ahead in Travel Tuesday, planning a family vacation to a national park.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon, I'm Rob Hart. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM. President Trump doubles down on tariffs targeting certain imports from Canada. The timetable is out for Phase 3 of the Kennedy Expressway reconstruction project. It's Travel Tuesday, maximizing a visit to one of America's national parks. WBBM Business, the markets are lower. And once again, losing altitude. The Dow is now down 1.75%. Or 711 points. The NASDAQ is down 191. The S&P 500 is down 76, or 79, I should say, right now, or nearly 1.5%. We have 44 degrees right now in Chicago under partly sunny skies. It's 12:31, topping our news at the half hour. President Trump is slapping Canada with additional tariffs on multiple imports. The latest from CBS's Allison Keyes.
The president says he is putting both a 25% tariff on electricity coming into the United States and an additional 25% tariff on all steel and aluminum coming into the U.S. from Canada. In all capital letters, the president calls Canada one of the highest tariffing nations in the world and demanded that it drop what he calls their anti-American farmer tariff on various U.S. dairy products. Allison Keyes, CBS News, Washington.
Drivers on the Kennedy Expressway need to prepare themselves for months of extra congestion and delays. The third phase of that multi-million-dollar rehabilitation project will begin a week from today and continue through late fall. Delays on phase two of the project left drivers with a much shorter than planned reprieve from construction during the winter months. You had about 2 months to enjoy those reversible lanes on the Kennedy before they are pointed out for the rest of the year. Markets are lower. Joining us with the latest on what's moving Wall Street is Michael Palumbo, founder of MJP Capital, author of the book Calculated Risk in Chicago. Michael, thank you for joining us today. And the markets tell a story every day. And what story have the markets been telling us today and yesterday?
Well, good afternoon, Robin. Thanks for having me on. Well, I believe the story is a little different than what the narrative you get in the news. The narrative in the news is that tariffs are terrible and that the stock market is going to keep going down as long as tariffs are in play. That is part of the equation. But the real issue was that stocks were just simply too high. We warned that at the end of the year on your show. We had said that we're in the highest cash position that we've been in 15 years. We are still that way. And it's because multiples just got too high. The S&P at 6,100 was trading at about 22 times what we thought this year's earnings were going to be. That is a huge, huge number. It normally is around 20. So now at 5,500 in the S&P, we're at 20 times. And I think that's a reasonable valuation. And we can grow from here. But how we grow from here, the tariff stuff does have to get out of the news. And it's not going to end anytime soon, it looks like. So besides the fact we were overvalued, we now have, you know, investors now have a reason to sell, which is the tariff wars. And that seems like it's going to continue at least for the next month or two. We'll have to see. And as that happens, valuations have just come back down to a reasonable level. We're not going into recession, at least not anything that I see so far, because if we're going into recession, you're talking S&P 500 under 5,000. I don't believe that's what's going to happen, but I do think we're going to have high volatility for the next couple of months as this tariff stuff continues to be in the news. But I do want to say that it's important that people understand that short-term market moves are not an indication of what is correct and incorrect policy for our government. So if you have a sell-off of 10%, that does not mean that our policy is wrong. I'm not saying it's right or wrong. I'm just saying that people need to look at stock market moves and not equate that with the president or the government or whatever are doing the right or wrong thing, because there's a lot of things that are happening right now that I personally agree with, but are not going to be great for stock prices. So, you know, again, we have a sell-off. It's going to the volatility is going to continue until this tariff news starts to take a backseat to hopefully better earnings than expected, which we do think are going to come out in April. But we'll have to wait to see when that happens.
And just to put this in perspective, the S&P 500, even with 2 days of selling and more than that, we're back to where we were roughly in September of last year, and substantially higher than where we were a year ago at this time. And this is with 2 days of pretty steep selling. So you're still ahead of the game, even with what's been going on recently.
Right, and that you're looking at it the right way, Rob, because if compared to, as you said, this time last year, we're still up. The stocks are still in a bullish trend. It's just been a short-term, pretty large sell-off because they just got overbought. You know, if you look at foreign stocks, if tariffs were that big of a deal, foreign stocks would be getting hit really hard as well. But if you look at China, the Chinese ETF, Mexican ETF, they're not doing that badly compared to us. We're selling off much harder. And it's because we just got our valuation just got too high. And I think that's really the story. And now we've come back to a reasonable level. And I think that you'll see volatility continue. But when earnings come out in April, that's when we'll find out, you know, if we can get a bullish leg back up again. And I do think that we will. But in the meantime, investors need to brace for volatility and keep some cash on hand right now, please.
Michael Palumbo, founder of MJP Capital, author of the book Calculated Risk in Chicago. Thank you for joining us today.
Information to make cash and save cash. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Travel Tuesday, part two on the Noon Business Hour, sponsored by Preflight Airport Parking. A family vacation to a national park makes for a fantastic trip and, with proper planning, can also be very affordable. Joining us with some advice is Angie Rice, co-founder of Boutique Travel Advisors, based in Scottsdale, Arizona, the website travelbta.com. Angie, thank you for joining us today. And as the father of three kids, Angie, we visited a national park a couple of years ago. And of course, one of the things you had to buy in the gift shop was that national park passport. So you can get it stamped at every national park on subsequent visits. And that seems like it would be a fun and worthwhile undertaking, but it would take a long time to do it.
Absolutely. But I will tell you, there are some advantages to planning like multiple trips to national parks to take advantage of those annual passes that make it more affordable.
Now, what if you want to plan on visiting a national park? I mean, in my experience, we've just gone for a day. The Cuyahoga Valley National Park outside of Cleveland. We did a drive through the Everglades a couple of years ago. But you could spend several days, if not a week or longer, at one national park.
Absolutely. And you can make it a road trip where you can venture to multiple national parks or extend your trip to include countryside that may or may not have a national park. I always like to emphasize to my clients when we're building these itineraries and we're planning trips for the future is that many people don't realize fourth graders have the opportunity to allow for their families to travel to national parks complimentary. So it's a good year to kind of put it on your bucket list when your child turns the age of a fourth grader.
And what are some things that if you're planning a national park vacation, whether it's one national park or multiple national parks in a single trip, what are some things that you should know to just get the most out of your visit and your experience?
Absolutely. You want to evaluate your accommodations. And first and foremost, you have to really understand your budget. What do you want to spend on this trip? There's luxury, rustic resorts that can cost thousands of dollars. And then there's glamping, but there's also ways to travel more affordably, whether it's taking advantage of the distance if you're traveling by car. You're visiting these natural parks, but there's also other places that are scenic. So maybe you stay 45 minutes, an hour and a half away from the national park. Another trick to the trade is to evaluate, maybe it's affordable hotels that fit your budget best, whether it's a Comfort Inn or, you know, a Days Inn. The real trick is to evaluate, when was that property last renovated or is it brand new? I've stayed in 3-star hotels near and around national parks that are nicer than some 4- or 5-star hotels that haven't been renovated. So that's a great way, is to establish when was that hotel first opened or last renovated.
And also, it seems like you should know the comfort level of physical activity for your family, because there are some people who they just love hiking and backpacking, kids of all ages, and there are people who enjoy going on long bike rides through a national park, and then there are some other people who tap out after an hour of walking. So I would imagine there are national parks that are geared towards all sorts of activities and all sorts of ability levels.
Right. I agree. You do want to understand where at the park is going to be more accommodating for someone who wants extreme sports, such as mountain biking, versus someone who just wants to maybe enjoy getting in and out of the car or visiting the park scenically by driving, so that there isn't a need for much mobility. I really like Moab National Park, and by all means, it can accommodate active travelers. But what I like about Moab is that they actually have 2 national parks, Canyonlands and Arches, are both located in Moab. So you get the benefit of 2 national parks within an hour of each other, probably less, but with drive time. And it's also well established. There's plenty of accommodation. Certainly you still have to plan ahead, but it's a great way to attach time spent in larger cities as well, such as Vegas or Phoenix. So it's right, Moab is kind of in either of those directions if you want a direct flight from Chicago.
And lastly, I think one of the great things about visiting national parks is that the people who staff them are just so darn nice. It's a lot of retirees. It's a lot of civic-minded volunteers. So you just walk away from your national park experience feeling better, because you just, their positivity, I think, rubs off on you.
There is a sense of community around travelers that prioritize visiting national parks. And I also want to emphasize, for people that don't have the means or the time to travel to out west, where most of our national parks are located, don't ignore the beautiful parks that are located in Illinois, from Starved Rock State Park to Mathiasen, and visiting the small towns like Ottawa, Illinois, that accompany the vicinity of these areas. It's a great day trip or weekend getaway from Chicago.
Angie Rice, co-founder, Boutique Travel Advisors, based in Scottsdale, Arizona. Find her online, travelbta.com.
This is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
Market dips can be unsettling, but long-term investors stay the course. Avoid emotional reactions and overtrading. Discipline and patience are key to weathering volatility. In other words, keep calm and carry on. We welcome in Mark Hulbert, investment columnist for the Wall Street Journal, Barron's, and MarketWatch.com, based in Washington. Mark, thank you for joining us today. And one of the upside of market valuations being where they are is that even these massive sell-offs, large numbers accompanying sell-offs, percentage-wise, are nowhere near as steep as we think they are.
I think that's exactly right. I mean, if you go back, you don't have to go back that far to realize we're still higher today than we were, let's say, a year ago, even though the market has come down over the last 2 or 3 weeks. And so it's the long-term perspective that makes the difference. There's a fascinating experiment that the country of Israel took on about 12, 15 years ago, where they prevented mutual fund companies from reporting
their performance statistics over any period shorter than 12 months. So you have to at least focus on performance over 12 months and longer. And they found that the average return of Israeli mutual fund investors went up after they made the change. And we all ought to take the lesson from that of just not to focus on what's happening on a day-to-day basis.
Well, even right now, just taking a look at the S&P 500, even after 2 days of substantial selling, it is way above where the market closed on March 12th of 2024. So even with all of this volatility, as far as the S&P 500 is concerned, we're still way ahead of where we were a year ago today.
Very good point, and that's exactly right. So it turns out that the more often you look at the market, your performance will probably go down. And that's a really hard thing for us to take into account. But the best thing we probably can do if we're investing for our retirement is not to focus on our retirement or our portfolio, retirement portfolio worth on a very frequent basis at all.
So in other words, Mark, the weather in Chicago, very nice yesterday, still sunny today. We're going to be in the 70s by Friday. So instead of looking at your retirement account and fretting over that number as it goes down, maybe you're just better off in the long run as a human being and as far as your investments are concerned, going for a walk and enjoying the sunshine.
Well, that's right. My wife's a clinical psychologist, and she tells me that all the time. So it's very good advice.
Mark Hulbert, investment columnist for The Wall Street Journal, Barron's, and MarketWatch.com, based in Washington. Thank you for joining us today.